and welcome to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and rocking with me for the second hour. Folks, we've been having a very interesting conversation talking about churches, nonprofit organizations, assisting police with crime-fighting strategies. This was the case that was that the Greater Baltimore Urban League was confronted with in Seton Hill when Councilman Eric Costello had asked the Greater Baltimore Urban League to use their space as a covert surveillance on some drug dealing activities in the community. Now, for me, I think it opens up a whole another can of worms, Pandora's box, folks, because at the end of the day, the nonprofit organization has its mission, but then you got to think about the public safety of those whose neighborhood you are situated in. So it leads us to believe that there might be some real struggle for us to for that nonprofit organization. So, but I'm asking the question: should church buildings and nonprofit organization properties? Should these churches and nonprofit organization properties be used to help in stopping crime and to advance public safety? 410-319-8888. Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's go to Carolyn Belair Addison, new caller. Carolyn, thank you so much for checking in, man. What's your take on this, Carolyn?
Hi, Raji. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I think it's a positive reinforcement because, first of all, you live in a community and people supposed to look out for each other. So if the body of Christ get involved, I mean, you got to conquer, you know, Satan territory. So if they do it, you know, we coming together. You know, God is no respecter of persons. It doesn't matter if you're in leadership, you know, outside of the church or in your community or even the police department. We all need to come together so we can stop this.
Regardless of what the mission of that particular nonprofit may be, you should still open up your doors this effort.
Right. And another positive reinforcement, lives can get saved. Mm. You know, because God can protect you too. And I just want to say one more thing. You know, churches are being destroyed, you know, burnt, people coming in there, busting up cars, because it happened to where I go at. I ain't going to mention the name of the ministry, but I don't see nothing wrong with it. We gotta come together anyway.
So what about trust, though, Carolyn? How do you make sure that the trust between the community and that organization or that church stays intact after the police has finished their surveillance? Or how do you make sure that it stays intact while the police may be there on your property?
Well, first of all, those of faith, those who, you know, trust God for protection, that's the main thing. You know, pray. They come together as one and believing that, you know, this can be conquered.
Yeah.
You know, because it can be. And then lives can get saved. That's the way I look at it.
That's the way you look at it. All right.
Well, right, because people are living in fear.
Oh, no,
before
we know that.
I walk out my house, I have to pray. I'm getting ready to go to the store now. And I have to pray because it's happening every day. 2 Timothy 3, chapter 3, in perilous times. We're in perilous times.
We are in perilous times.
You know, mothers against mothers. And,
yes, ma'am.
You know, it's the Satan. You know, he's the ruler of the air.
Taking me to church on Monday evening.
So
go ahead, Carolyn. Come on. No, I hear you. I absolutely hear you. And that's the thing. And Carolyn, I appreciate you for being a new caller. Please don't let this be the last time. That's the thing that is at the front of my mind. Like, yes, we all have our individual work, but then we got the greater work that we are all involved in, which is the preservation of life. Robert, Northwest Baltimore. Thank you for your patience, Robert. What's your take on it, sir?
I think, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I think, first of all, they started off wrong again. They're going to let the horse out the barn before everything gets started. first of all, if they was going to use the church, which I think they should have let the church do some things independently first, then have a partnership on how we're going to control most of the community and get some respect from the people that they can come through that pastor, come through that deacon, and come through that church and allow them to work together and put down some of the whatever they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But lastly, I want to say they've been throwing up these satellites in our community for the last 8-9 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nothing that they don't know. And I would advise the church, if you are, and I'm not trying to be cute-faced about it, but do your homework about what activities do they really want to come out of the church. Mm-hmm. The girl used one word that is greatly right. Don't get compromised, and that the people will never trust you again.
Right, right. That's a big thing.
There are some things that could be very ugly.
It could be. It can be. It can be. Now, and Robert, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for checking in. Now, in July, folks, if you did not know this, the Baltimore City Police Department created what they call a City Police Lounge with the goal of, quote unquote, building relationships with the community. And so that's they're using that as a way to create the bridge, to help bridge the gap of and to hope to lead to some budding trust. Now, according to, the Baltimore Sun, they did an interview and they talked to Reverend Dr. Alvin Hathaway, who I know from Union Baptist Church. And he said there's really no barrier between our church, our community, and our officers. So he put it out there that when it comes to something like this, like there's no barrier. There shouldn't be any boundaries. Now, there might be some other pastors, some ministers that may say, hey, you know what? No, I'm not opening my doors to the police. Oh, don't know. But you know what, though? Like, again, I said it at the top of the hour. This could potentially be the tipping point. It could be, because we have over, and I'm not making up these numbers, folks. Last time I did the research, talked to folks, we have over 1,400 churches in the city of Baltimore. Might be a little bit more, might be a little bit less. But, okay, let's start with 14. Let's go with a very safer number. Let's cut that out. Let's say 1,000 churches in the city of Baltimore. 1,000. Can you imagine what the 1,000 churches can do in relieving some of the burden of crime and violence in this city? Now, that doesn't mean that they never help. It's just I want us to put our thinking caps on and just say, can you imagine? Let's go back to the lines. Let me hear from Michael from Reisterstown, then Paul. Michael, what's your take on that? Okay, Michael, we lost Michael. We just got to him, and we lose him. Jeez. Oh, my heart is broken. All right, let's go to Paul, West Baltimore. Paul, what's your take, sir?
Well, there's a scripture in the Bible where Jesus said that my Father's house should be just a house of prayer. The church should be able to come out into the community. And we're not seeing that happen a lot in so many cases, Brother Roger. There was a lieutenant by the name of Malvin T. Russell. He had a program where he was getting ministers together along with pastors. I went to one of his meetings. And what he was doing was he was having these pastors and ministers to ride out with the police. You were required to do it. Maybe you had to put, I think it was 8 hours in. Okay, that means that ministers throughout the community would ride with the police. They would somewhat interact with the police, not confrontating, to arrest people, nothing like that. But they was there to try to build the gap, the bridge, you know, between the community and the police department. Here's the biggest problem that we have in Baltimore, Brother Faraj. And I'm sure if you live in the city, if you've been in the city, I guarantee, if you just drive through the city and park your vehicle and look at the corner where the guys are out, and look across the street, you'll see a police sitting in his car. Okay, now, when you talk, and I'm out here, So I talk to the guys that's dealing. I talk to the police officer. When I talk to the police officer, and I ask them, you know, a lot of times I see you guys sitting in your car. You're not doing. You know what they tell me? Our hands are full. A lot of them are afraid to get involved because they don't know if they're going to get fired, if they're going to get sued. See, that's a problem.
So here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. Go ahead. Real quick, just very quickly, Paul.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, so if that's the dynamic, I mean, look at the dynamic then. The dynamic is the police are sitting in cars saying our hands are full. The church is saying no. The nonprofit organization are saying no. The community, we don't speak up, right? There's a silence, there's a barrier, right? Snitches get stitches is the order of the day, unfortunately. So we got all of this, all of these barriers that are keeping us from making progress. The only people that are saying yes are the ones pulling the trigger.
But what changed that, Brother Faraji? Does the consent decree? That's what they have. They have to sit down and they have to come to agreement to say, look, let us police or we can't do our job.
And Paul, my point is then on that is we as a city have to ask ourselves the question, what type of police force do we want? Now, we can't answer that right now, but I'm saying we have to ask ourselves the question because I've heard officers that have shared the same sentiment saying that the way we used to police back in the day, it necessarily wasn't always the best way, but it kept crime at a manageable rate. I don't think we can totally eliminate crime.
That's true, but as a pastor, you don't want to jeopardize your members, too, with all the violence that's out here. But keep in mind, this is a whole different game than what we are accustomed and used to.
I know.
People, man.
But you know what, though?
I would not want to put my church in jeopardy for the sake of letting police set up a civilian in a house that's supposed to be a house of praise and worship. Now, what's wrong with the police going out here and doing their job? Brother Faraji, my hand right now. I'm telling you, if one day me and you would ride together, I would show you exactly what's going on out here. You would see guys shooting crack. You would see guys selling dope. And you would see the police sitting in their cars.
I got you. Hey, Paul, I got you. Look, I got to let you go, Paul. You know you're my man, 100 grand. But I still got to let you go. But you bring it up a valuable point. But that's what I'm saying. That's the conundrum that we find ourselves in. Because this is big picture, context thinking, folks. This is not just like, oh, because what we saw that has took place in Seton Hill is something that's ongoing across the city. The police may have reached out to many different people, and the people are like, whether it's churches, whether it's the nonprofits, whether it's businesses, the police are probably not getting no response. Then the community, we not talking. So violence is happening. Violence is running rampant. Drugs is being sold. People are being killed. And guess what? We all living in a state of fear. We're in a place of a barrier, right? We're expecting the police to do it all. We're not using very innovative tactics, thinking out of the box. I'm not saying that this might be the way out of this dark place that we're in. I'm certainly not saying that. But I'm saying let's think all the options through. That's what I'm saying. Let's think all the options through. Otherwise, we're going to stay in the same place. Let's go back to the phone line, see what we have to say. Let's go to Clarence, Northwest Baltimore. Clarence, talk to me. What's your take?
Hey, Faraji. I'm not buying none of that, you know, and I respect, you know, the last call of Paul, but no, the police are telling you when they're sitting in their car and making the excuse, we're not sure whether or not we're going to get fired or whatever. No, you should not get fired if you're doing your job and not violating people's civil rights and brutalizing them. That's what the pushback against the public was. You're sitting in your car and telling me that you can't police this network without violating people's civil rights, then you should be fired. What kind of nonsense is that? Do you get on this radio station every day? Do you not cuss or use curse words? No, you do not, because you know there's some ramifications for that. As long as you do your job, you got a job. That's an excuse I don't want to hear anymore. Now, you're going to tell me that somebody, what was it, the person that suggested that these people use their facilities as a surveillance apparatus for the police department? That's crazy. That's crazy. What's, are you offering these people? Look at the type of people that you're dealing with, Faraji. Churches burn, bullets kill people, and they don't have a problem with that. And now, internally, you're going to, anybody out there is going to tell me that they trust the police department 100%, that there is not a rogue element within the police department that would turn those drug dealers on the people that are helping them, then you're out of touch with reality, bro. You know, I'm not talking. Okay, Faraj, let me calm down.
Yeah, go ahead, calm down, Clarence. Hey, Clarence, no, I got, as a matter of fact, I hear what you're saying. I got to let you go. I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. Let's go back to the line. Let's go to James, South Baltimore. Then I want to hear from Dwayne, Baltimore City. James, talk to me. 410-319-8888, folks.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, I got two things, right?
Yes, sir.
Arkansas Valley area, where they building that amphitheater. That's
yeah.
Going to be real nice for Arkansas Valley area. So if any, you know, entrepreneurs coming out there to get these houses up on the other side of the park over there in the Arkansas Valley does, we'll come do it now. You know, just about this neighborhood. You know, show some black strength over in this neighborhood. You know, where you can get houses pretty cheap right now over here. They definitely think about it. It's going to change. It's going to be a nice neighborhood. That's number one. And number two, look how many deaths we had in the last 3 years. Over 1,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
Way over 1,000. I mean, what's going to change? You got to. Somebody has to do something. You know, if you need.
So you're saying, and James, to make sure I understand, you're saying that the churches and the nonprofits should open their doors to for the sake of public safety.
Of course.
Gotcha.
Of course, because there's no other way. There's no other way to do it. I mean, you can't do. You don't want to do stop and frisk. You know what I mean? The community events don't work. So I mean, you have to just meet it where you need to meet it at.
Mm.
If that's what it's going to take. To take people out, you know, brothers need to do what they need to do in the church. There's some strong brothers in the church. They can protect the church.
Yeah.
But, you know, at one point, when is it going to stop?
There it is.
So what are you going to do? What are you willing to give up have it stop?
That's a big question. That is
right.
What are you
willing to do? How many mothers you need to see cry? How many fathers you need to see cry? How many brothers and sisters you need to see cry, you know, before you make a stance and say, look, no matter what it takes,
we need to
subside.
Yeah. James, I gotta go. You're making a big, that's a very big question. When is it going to stop? How much will we take? Dwayne, talk to me, sir. Baltimore City.
Hey, man, thanks for letting the brother ride.
Faraji, you're welcome, brother.
You know, I don't know, Faraji. I'm just like at the end of my psychological rope with these issues. I mean, you know, once there was a story of Baltimore, and there was a battle that was raged between love and all the vices of hate and evil. And I can tell you, Faraji, as I look around, it seems like love is losing the fight.
Mm.
Love is losing the fight. I mean, listen, and we're all part of the problem because, you know, we were really sick and tired, and we were at the end of it. We just couldn't take it no more.
Yeah.
We would clean up those neighborhoods. But you know, we're not down there in those neighborhoods, you know, fighting the fight with those people, standing shoulder to shoulder with those people. We go into our nice little cushy six-figure jobs, going back to our suburbs or going back to our nice little neighborhoods where we don't have to deal with those problems. But we watch them on the news and we call in and we complain and all of that stuff. And, you know, there is a darkness that has taken over, you know, certain areas of the city. And with the darkness in the city administration, with the police department, with the challenges there, I just don't see love winning this battle. I see just dark times ahead. And should we ask a church, you know, in the heart of these places or in the depths of these places to expose themselves to the darkness and be overtaken? I mean, a part of me says yes, but there's another part of me that says why? So they can just be destroyed and parishioners be ran out. And, you know, I mean, we're almost, it's almost like asking them to stand in front of a firing squad and to, you know, die for the cause.
That's heavy.
We're not that. We the six-figure crowd, the the middle class, the uppity blacks, we're not down there fighting the fight with them, but we're asking them to do it? I don't know.
Mm.
I don't know.
Dwayne, my goodness. Woo! Dwayne, thank you so much for checking in. Are we asking for people to do something that we wouldn't be willing to do? Mm. I remember when I was working in one particular neighborhood, and they have a very, very old church. I mean, this church is historic because it's been in this neighborhood for over 100 years. But they, one of the officials of the church shared with me that like 75% of the church members don't live in the community. Now, this community was challenged by some major issues, folks, major issues from drugs to violence and everything else. But now, today, 75% of the church members do not live in the community. So they go to church, they go to service, and they essentially drive out and they go home. 25% are still left in the neighborhood, right? So this is not an indictment on churches. This conversation is really a look at what is the infrastructure or what is the what is going to be the system to address crime and violence in this issue outside of what we traditionally know and what we've traditionally been accustomed to. You know, we could do the block watch. We have just had a national night out just a few nights ago. These type of things, yes, right? And I think they should still continue to happen. But there does need to be some level of engagement. We see what I mentioned talking about the City Police Lounge. That is a partnership that Union Baptist Church under Reverend Dr. Alvin Hathaway has established, right? But the question is that something, is that a model that we should be able to duplicate? Is that something that we need to look at to a model that we can say, you know what, let's look at how that was working out, and then we can get some other churches involved. That level of engagement. Because at this point, something should be done. I think we're all at this point of agreeing, at least, that this whole situation is out of control. Drug dealing, violence, the whole nine, it's out of control. Now we got to come to some agreement about how to deal with it. Let's go back to the phone lines. Let me go to John. John, checking in from Ellicott City. Thank you for your patience. What's your take?
Thank you, Faraji. I was a bivocational pastor for about 20 years in a church, you know, in the Medominarium.
Yes, sir.
Small church, small membership. Churchgoers now, they expect the church to provide some type of protection for, you know, for the ones that attend. We walked out one night and bullets were flying right after prayer meeting.
Woo.
So I could speak for myself to thank the Lord. We stayed in prayer meeting just long enough. It was late, and by the time we walked out, the shooting, we were aware that there was shooting, so we jumped back inside the church.
Wow.
And I think in the church that I attend now, I'm retired as a pastor, that the first thing you see is a police state trooper car.
Yes, sir.
The person in charge of security is also a state trooper officer. People also live in the general. They see people being gunned down. People have parked cars. They come back. The tires are gone. So I think in the churches that can afford it, I think what they're talking about is just sharing any surveillance information they might pick up from their cameras for something, you know, involving the commission of a crime.
Yeah.
I don't think they're talking about the church, the pastor or members becoming spies and active police officers.
No. I mean, they're essentially using the space. Right. But some people, as you know, Brother John, some people are saying, no, I'm not letting police, I wouldn't let police in my church. I wouldn't let them in my organization.
And I agree with that. That they shouldn't be in the church, and if there's any surveillance equipment, it should be approved by the church and purchased by the church. I don't think police
are. Okay.
I agree. They shouldn't be installing equipment in churches. No.
In churches. Right.
Thank you.
Hey, John, thank you, brother. 410-319-8888. We got to take a final break. When we come back, I got Melvin, Tony, Jennifer, Tanya, and Lolly from West from Woodlawn checking in. We're talking about it. Now, again, this happened with the Greater Baltimore Urban League, folks, that Councilman Eric Costello asked President Tiffany Majors of the Urban League to open up its doors. I'm expanding the conversation to include churches. Faith institutions. I'm expanding the conversation to that because I think is worthwhile in talking about, right? And could this be something that could help to reduce violence in our city? But I want to bring up, I'm going to bring up another part of this conversation into the equation as we wrap it up. So stay riding with me. A whole lot is coming up in the final 30 of For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM.
Public radio is a partnership, and we at WEAA 88.9 are in partnership with you. Each day, we do the best possible job we can to bring you radio that's enjoyable. In exchange, we ask that you show your support and make a financial contribution to WEAA. Listeners like you provide the most important source of income. So it's simple. Take a moment right now to join the Public Radio Partnership. Call 443-885-2075, or you can give online at weaa.org. Thank you.
Saturday night doesn't end at midnight. This is DJ Patrick Scientific, and no matter where you are, the party still continues every Saturday night here from midnight until 5 a.m. We bring you the same great music that you know and great music that you don't know. Local, national, and international. House, hip-hop, drum and bass, and so much more. So make sure you tune into the audio infusion every Saturday night here on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
I do this for my culture.
Peace and welcome back to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me. Folks, I'm enjoying this conversation. Let me just say that first and foremost, as we talk about this idea of nonprofit organizations, and I'm going to throw it in there, churches, possibly open up its doors to help police to address issues of drug dealing and crime in specific areas. Is this an idea that we need to really embrace, or is this an idea that we should just toss to the side and say, nope, it's not happening? Of course, the big concerns around this issue is the fact of trust, that the nonprofit may have built a certain level of trust among the residents of a particular community. And now with the police coming into the picture, it will create some tension for some residents to believe that the organization is working on their behalf. But also for churches, understanding the mission of the church and understanding the very real issue and need of public safety and how that may be a real security breach if you do not have a strong partnership with the police department. So many elements of this conversation, right? And then we got to talk about the fact that that you have people that are looking to invest in that community, whether it's the nonprofit or whether it's the churches. So there has to be something. Something has to be. And I've been kind of just reiterating this throughout the conversation tonight. Can this be a tipping point for us to address the issue, since we know that our police department is not working at a full capacity right now? Can the churches and nonprofit organizations help to fill in the gaps of where the police may not be able to have their eyes and ears to the streets? Let's go back to the phone line, hear what you got to say. Who we got? Lolly, Woodlawn, talk to me. Then Melvin. Lolly?
Yeah, you hear me?
Yep, go ahead, Lolly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like you said, I mean, I don't know if we really want churches to start playing the police role, because, you know, majority of the churches don't have nothing but probably like older folks. There's not too many young people that go to churches. So I don't think we need them to play that type of role. Like you said, they could play a role as far as financially helping us.
Lolly, you still with us? I look like Lolly, you some technical issues. You're saying not looking to the churches to financially help us. All right, let's go back to the line. Let me hear from Jennifer out of Baltimore County, church's obligation to underserved community. What is that obligation in your mind, Jennifer?
you know, the African American church was always involved in moving communities forward. We wouldn't have our civil rights liberties if it wasn't for churches stepping up in the 50s and the 60s leading protests. But I say not churches necessarily being police, but they can offer mentorship programs, parenting programs. They can do things in the community and offer it to lift it up. But I will say this as well with the churches and their security. Because of the times we live in, there is a program through Homeland Security that they've been reaching out to churches and giving safety workshops. Because churches always, they have all of the doors open because all are welcomed, but they don't have fire drills. They don't have a safety plan if there's a shooter. But now Homeland Security does have a program. They just hosted a workshop in Prince George's County about 2 months ago, and they invited all of the local churches in to hopefully have a safer gathering place. But, yes, churches have a responsibility. They take people's money in the community.
Yeah.
They have titles in the community. So if you can take people's money to buy property, jet planes, cars, you know, pay people's salary, then you should give back to that community also. Because, again, Martin Luther King didn't stand by himself. Martin Luther King stood in front of a church.
There it is. There it is. Jennifer, thank you so much for checking in from Baltimore County. Yes, ma'am. Talking about social services. Melvin, what you got to say? Baltimore checking in. What's your take?
Hey, brother Faraji. Thank you for letting us ride with you tonight, bro.
Yes, sir. You're welcome.
Hey, look, I'm going to say something real fast, and I'm going to defer to my wife. I'm just going to say, number one, answer your question. I do not agree with providing space for surveillance equipment at a nonprofit or at a church. I think that it's a conflict of interest. When you're a church and you're a nonprofit, one of the first things involved in almost 90% or more of those missions is to round a would-be, quote-unquote, criminal, to round them off at the pass before they get involved in the system or caught up in the system. So you're doing that on one side, and then on the back side, you're contributing to the disproportionate means in which our local police department has shown that they're policing.
Mm.
So, you know, I do not agree with, you know, helping from that standpoint. And I'm like Clarence. I know I'm gonna get out of pocket with my emotions right now, so I'm gonna defer to my wife to let her finish.
So, thank you again for taking our call. One of the other things we were thinking about is the level of corruption that's been exposed in the Baltimore City Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
And the fear,
yes, ma'am,
that's associated with that.
Yep.
So we were talking about maybe yes, something needs to be done, and maybe the partnership could be listening to citizens, listening to these nonprofits, listening to these churches, and bridging gaps in a way where citizens are able to help clean up corruption first, and then maybe some trust can get built.
Right.
You know, reports about what's been happening in the Baltimore City Police Department have been going on for decades.
Yep.
But citizens' voices weren't heard. So now we're saying, let's plant the police officers here and allow them to do surveillance. Well, like he said, there's a disproportionate amount of African-American citizens being arrested, and now we're giving them more access to brutalize, criminalize, you know, and now, you know, so where's that trust? Can we build trust in a way where we're cleaning up the corruption first and then talk about...
I don't know, because, and you know what, and I understand why you would say that, sis. The only thing is that crime and time won't stop. You know what I'm saying? Like there's, I think we have to either, I don't think it's an either or. I think it's, we just have to do those things in tandem together. Because, otherwise, I mean, look, we are a multifaceted, multi-generational community, right? We have a lot of different skills, talents. I think we have the ability to have a group of people to say, okay, we're going to address corruption, and this is y'all work. And then the community folks to say, all right, I'm going to help build a community and rebuild the relationships, restore some of the community. I think we're at that point in our city. you know. So and I agree. I agree, right? But there's the biggest element in that equation is time, because crime, it could potentially still happen. It's going to take time for us to build those relationships. It's going to take time for us to rebuild the communities that have been destroyed because of violence and drug dealing and from all of that. So I think it can be done. It's just that, and to throw it at the final piece is the expectations of it all, you know, because some people may say, you know what, this should be done much sooner rather than later. So I don't know, but I think it can be done.
So, Brother Faraji, what I haven't heard anybody say anything about why, instead of coming to bring covert answers to those properties, how about coming out to those properties with your public liaison from the police department and setting up shop right on Front Street, saying, "Hey, look, we're interested in helping you clean up this this community. So what we're going to do is we're going to come in here and we're going to occupy. We're going to get city funds and pay this community center or this church to occupy an office in your establishment to help clean up this community and deal with the people that are coming in and out of those doors as not as a friend, but as what's the word I'm looking for? As somebody that's a teammate, you know?
Like a partner.
Let me meet at that partnership.
Right.
Okay? I'm not trying to be sneaking underhanded and catch the nickel and dimers because
corruption.
We already know that the word is going to get out that those cameras are there. The word is going to get out that this operation is taking place. So instead of doing that, which is going to put a bigger wedge between the community and the establishment that's there to offer resources in the first place, how about you come out there on Front Street and say, look, we're not trying to be sneaky. We're here to help. We want to build a partnership.
And Melvin, you and your wife, y'all are bringing up some great points. The only thing I would, and I'm thinking about this, is that there are literally some people or some church members or pastors that say, I don't want nothing to do with the police.
Exactly. And see what's going to happen. And I would say, I didn't want to bring this up, but because it prolongs my call, our call. But at the same time, you know what? You just said 75% of the people in this one church don't actually live in that neighborhood. 25% do.
Right.
Now you take that. You take those people in that nonprofit organization that are volunteering to offer their help to clean up this community they don't live in. And now, as a leader, you're making the decision on their behalf to set up a covert operation. Now, how many people are you going to lose from that establishment, whether it be a church or a nonprofit organization, that don't agree with that leadership decision? And now you're going to lose the resource that you have in people that volunteer to help those in your neighborhood.
Melv, I got to let you go, but you are absolutely on point with this. Your analysis is on point. It's on point. Let me go back to the phone line. I was about to jump to Tanya, but let me get to who we got here. We got Brenda from Perry Hall, then hear from Tony, Damon, Arrington. Brenda, talk to me. Brenda?
I'm here.
Yes, ma'am, Brenda. Thank you for your patience. What's your take?
You're welcome. We the people always have the answers, and I wonder if the individuals that's calling in reference this matter, have you all attended any meetings, reference how to help the crime in Baltimore City? I'm on a fence with what the police department, what else can they do?
Mm-hmm.
The cousins, the mothers, the fathers, the uncles, the aunts, the grandmas aren't calling their nieces and nephews or committee who are committing these crimes. If they're not turning them in, what else would you want the police to do?
Mm. So are you saying, Brenda, hold on, make sure I understand. Are you saying that it's unrealistic for us to have a very real conversation if the family members themselves, the ones closer to the perpetrators, are not willing to do anything?
What's up? Case closed. Because we know, most of us know our family members who may reside in our home.
Yep.
And you know their disposition, their demeanor. And if you suspect something or you know something, are you turning them in? Everybody look for Baltimore City Police to do the job. They cannot do the job every day, all the time, every second and minute when these people are getting killed, not in the PMs anymore. They're getting killed in the AM. The sun is bright.
Right.
So what do y'all want them to do if the church is an issue? They're putting it out there to try to help decrease the crime in the Baltimore City. You're never going to stop it because ignorance of individuals or no hard cowards going to continue to be who they are. But they're trying to minimize it. What do the people who's listening in or have called into this station, what do you all want them to do?
There it is. Hey, Brent, I got to stop you right there. You're bringing up a great point. Let's go back to Tanya, then DeMond. Tanya, talk to me. What's your take? Tanya? Yep, we got Tanya back.
Yes.
Thank you for your patience, Tanya. What's your take on this, ma'am?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I think that there are a lot of partnerships. I'm an active member in a church, and I think there are a lot of partnerships that already exist that aren't necessarily advertised.
Right, so which is good.
Right. People have a perception, or they make this statement very often, that churches aren't doing anything, that the preachers are crooks, that they're taking your tithes and buying jets. Those types of things.
Right.
But it takes money to do the type of work that you're asking the church to do. It takes money to fund that type of involvement. Yes, there are volunteers, but a lot of those volunteers give up time, energy, effort. You want to make sure they have something to eat while they're working. Yes, there are volunteers. You want to make sure that they have, you know, certain comforts while they're doing it. And that all of that takes money. But we keep disrespecting the police and saying that the police aren't doing anything. Then we disrespect the preachers, say the preachers aren't doing anything. We speak down to everyone who we want to help us and then tell them to help us.
Mm.
It's unfair. Mm. At some point, you've got to realize that everybody in the police department isn't corrupt, and every preacher isn't stealing your money, and every church isn't 75%. Outside of the city. Some of us are in the city. I go to church in East Baltimore. I live in East Baltimore. And so we've got to stop being so negative about everything.
Let me ask you this, though. But, Tanya, you understand why there is that pessimism that exists, though, right?
I understand, but at the same time, you're asking that the church be an active part of it, but then you want to tell the church to shut up.
Mm.
Don't tell me what to do. You can't tell me how to run my life. So you want the church to stand up and be present, but then you want to tell the church that they can't be present the way they're designed to be present. You want to control their messaging. It's a double-edged sword.
It's a double.
You want them to be there the way they're designed to be there, or you don't want them to be there.
Tanya, I got to let you go, but you bringing it up. Man, oh, man. All right, let's go to DeMond. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's go to Tony. He's been waiting a little bit longer than DeMond. DeMond, let me get right to you. Tony, thank you for your patience. Thank you.
Look, just a couple of points because, you know, I'm listening to the pain and anguish of oppressed people. Mm. So when you're talking about the black preachers, you know, the original black preachers on the plantation's job were to keep the slaves docile. Not to uprise. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're talking about...
Well, those black preachers that were taught by the slave master.
And what's the difference now?
Well, you got a different theology now, though, Tony.
Do we?
Yeah.
In the pulpit? Well, let me make my
go ahead,
case.
Make your point. Oh, yeah, we don't want to get into that, but go ahead.
You know what I'm saying? And so you're talking about the black church. What does the black church represent? See, because when you're talking about the white community and what the white church represents, the white churches are the foundations of systemic racism and oppression. And they are, speak candidly, per se. The evangelicals are the biggest supporters of Trump. So when you're talking about the police connecting with the churches in our community that are disconnected in the communities that they are, and fixing the ails of the community without addressing the causes. So everything I've heard has been effect. Oh, the crime and drug selling. Well, as long as you have concentrated communities of poverty, no men in households and households broken up, you will consistently have poverty, crime, etc. And again, I've said this before, the police has been doing what they're supposed to do. The police are not here to unoppress us in our community. That's our jobs in our community. And I heard the lady say earlier about, well, the church was the forefront of the civil movement, rights movement. No, they weren't. They were college students. And actually, when Martin Luther King started with the civil rights movement, his father was the biggest, had the biggest church in Atlanta. The churches did not back him. That was a young movement. It was not the pastors and the ministers. Mm. They were docile. They wanted to keep the things as they were. And so so when I hear this, you know, and I hear everything is talking about our environment and circumstances, well, everything is a cause and effect. I don't care if we get 1 million police in our community. As long as we are oppressed with systemic racism and put in communities of concentrated poverty, what do you think is going to happen?
Tony, that's got to be the final word with you. I gotta let you go. DeMond, talk to me.
Yes,
then I want to hear from Tiffany, then Leroy.
So, you know, today, in every one of our individual lives, as well as collective lives, today is a reality of what we have prepared for. So if we are experiencing what we are experiencing in our community, it means that we either have not been presented with a plan of action or either have not acted on that plan of action that's been presented.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, what I'm hearing, the way I'm processing it is, we are looking at policing majority from the standpoint of organized police, meaning Baltimore City or whatever locale, and stating that they are the police. Well, in truth, policing deals with maintaining public order, safety, and maintaining, investigating criminal offenses and such. So we, in truth, as a community, could, well, rightly so, police our own community. We could have magistrates where it is selected or voted upon magistrate, which we can utilize tax funding if we organize, use tax-based funding to pay such individuals to handle our minor cases that happens within our community in larger cases, take it to a judge, but yet that's maintained through a board and such from the community itself. What I'm sharing is this is, seems like to me, a Department of Justice that we can bring forth in our own community. At the end of the day, we're looking at the same individual that we're calling oppressors. We're looking at for them to be the only ones to police us and not taking the stick from them and policing ourselves.
Mm.
That's a problem, and that's what's typically been the problem in our community.
Mm. DeMond, thank you so much, big brother. I appreciate you.
I'll just end with this, Brother Faraji. The offer of ministries has been presented to us. The Millions More Movement, 10 ministries have been presented. I ask all of us to look at it. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Mm. Department of Justice. Tiffany, new caller. Got the final word tonight, Tiffany. What's your take?
I want to make 3 quick points.
Go ahead, Tiffany.
First of all, churches and religious organizations, because I'm not a Christian, need to do more to keep those who go into the criminal element from even reaching that point. So once we get to the point where we're out there and not just within the four walls of the building,
mm-hmm.
then we can keep them from moving towards that element.
But you know what?
Right?
Tiffany, let me just say this very quickly. I think churches are doing it. I think there are some churches that are really striving to transform people's lives.
I'm not saying. I'm just saying that churches as a whole or religious organizations as a whole,
mm-hmm.
if we did more to get outside of the building to reach those before they get that point. Because when we have service, they can have service outside talking to the people, right?
Yeah.
And then the other quick point the other two quick points I wanted to make was that when our people are the victims of police brutality and it's caught on camera, it does nothing for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be difficult for me to bring that camera into my religious organization. And the other thing that I would say, well, if they go to those Catholic churches where the criminal element is and deal with what happens with those children and being abused,
mm-hmm.
then I say they can come to ours and say, let us use your church to, you know, find out what these people are doing. They're not going to take it to the Catholic church.
Mm.
But they would expect us to do something like that in our community because they want to criminalize our behavior as opposed to getting at the root causes.
Mm. So you say it's more of it's more, well, obviously racism plays a huge part of it based on what I'm hearing from you.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also about the congregation members themselves are being policed versus the people outside of the congregation.
It'll actually work both ways.
Okay.
It'll actually work both ways.
And how do you see trust? How do you see trust playing into this? Because that's been the overriding element of this conversation, that folks are saying, look, we got to think for the what's better for the sake of the whole versus just what's better for the sake of the organization or that church.
I think that it would erode the trust that any religious organization has with the community.
Yeah.
Because if we were not victims of police brutality, and we were dealt equally and fairly within the criminal justice system, then we could probably move forward with something like that. But that's not our reality. So I think that it will erode the trust in any religious organization.
Tiffany, you got the final word.
It's a catch-22. It's like the eyes.
It's a huge catch. Tiffany, it's a catch-22 and 23, 24. I mean, I'm bringing this up because it's so many elements, and it's such a complex problem.
It is. There are a lot of different dynamics.
On it, and I'm trying to think like, okay, can this be a tipping point to change the culture and the wave of violence, or will this deepen and create much more violence than we need to see?
I think cameras definitely won't make it. I think that it won't make the relationships with the community any better.
Mm.
I think that we need to build those relationships, and we could move them from the criminal element, you know, versus using cameras just to police us.
Right. Tiffany, I appreciate you. Hopefully this will not be the last time we hear from you. Thank you for checking in. Folks, man. Well, we know where the Urban League stood on this issue, with the president Majors, Tiffany Majors, saying that this is not going to happen. And we know where the city councilman, Eric Costello, stood on the issue. But I feel like we should kind of revisit this. I really feel like that because there were so many diverse answers. I mean, I feel like there was a 50-50. We should revisit this. I know, Reverend Hathaway, Alvin Hathaway, kind of look at what he's doing in his church. And there might be some more churches that have a partnership with the police department. Maybe we can get them on to talk about this. Like, is that working? How is that coming along? And I'm being serious. Like, how's that working out for you? You know how some people just say that just to be funny. No, I'm being serious. Like, how is it working out for you? Is it changing the culture of violence in your neighborhood, in the church neighborhood, or not? Because I feel like there's still some unanswered questions to this, some unresolved things to this. The big thing is trust. The big thing is that we have to be very clear what is it that we want from our police department. We have to move past the pain and the hurt that we have inflicted upon ourselves. We certainly got to look at past the pain and the hurt that any institution may have inflicted on us. If we're talking about moving forward, and I like what one of our callers said, that every pastor and minister is not a thief. Okay? Every person that's run a nonprofit organization is just not trying to take your money. We do have to think much better of ourselves. We do have to believe much and see and value the best part of ourselves. We got to land on the good, but the best part. Otherwise, we're going to find ourselves in this ongoing rut each and every day because we don't trust each other. We don't believe each other. We don't value each other. And it's going to be hard to work with each other if we are not at that space. All right. I want to thank each and every one of you. Melvin checked in on my Facebook and said family restoration leads to community restoration. We should love to see Baltimore Police Department offer time and resources that will contribute towards building the family infrastructure through partnering. This is not direct policing. This is indirect policing by setting foundations of trust in the community and subsequently change through proactive means. Catch the would-be before you have to catch the criminal. I'm just saying. Oh, my gosh. That's absolutely on point. All right, folks, that's going to do it for me. I want to thank each and every one of you for being a part of the conversation, both online and on air. I want to thank my dynamic production team, Ms. Mallory Pinker-Pierre, Alex Blanc, Rita Crystal Foster, and my man Sean Don for making me sound so good. Stay tuned. Us up next is Pam Jones, as she sits in for my big sister, LaDawn Black, for In the Groove, where she can get that smooth jazz and that neo-soul and R&B. That's going to be coming up at you in a few moments. As always, check us out at WEAA.org for all the latest in news and information and your favorite podcasts. And as always, remember this, never be afraid to challenge what's wrong. Stand for what's right while being yourself in the process. I look forward to talking to you tomorrow for another exciting edition of For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM. Absolutely the voice of the community. And remember, Baltimore, do more, but be exceptionally good for the culture. Peace.
Promoting the preservation and forward progression of jazz, music, and culture. Public Radio 88.9. WEAA FM and HD1 Baltimore.
WEAA 88.9 FM, honored by the Chesapeake Associated Press for outstanding talk show, outstanding public affairs, outstanding commentary, and outstanding multimedia journalism. WEAA.